from medieval manuscripts to medieval memes. Today, we talk about online medieval manuscripts. Hello and welcome to the Medieval Grad Podcast. It's a podcast brought to you by medievalists.net, where we meet and chat with graduate students and early career researchers to learn about the new trends in medieval studies. I'm Lucie Lemonnier, a medieval historian and a podcast host, and today I'm talking with Suzette van Aachen, a PhD candidate in art history at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands and at the University of St. Andrews in the UK. Suzette recently defended her dissertation and is working on the corrections, and she's expecting to graduate in May 2022. Hello, Suzette. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Lucie. Thank you for having me. This is great.
So, Suzette, your research focuses on the digitization of medieval manuscripts. And digitized archives and manuscripts have been a real blessing since COVID hit, but they also were a blessing before, of course. Not all medievalists have the financial means to travel to look at primary sources, and not all medievalists want to travel long distances to access these manuscripts. First, let's talk digitization. I'd like to hear you talk about the history, with quotes, of manuscript digitization projects. When did they start? How frequent are they now? And what purposes do they serve?
That's a great question. So, but it's also quite a difficult question, I think, to answer. The history of manuscript digitization projects is quite murky. It's often not very well recorded. And kind of those early digitization projects are often already taken off the web, or kind of updated to modern standards, so we don't really know what they look like in the day. But I'll tell you a little bit of what I know. So the earliest digitization projects originated in the 1990s, but it's really hard to say which were first. But I actually have in my hand here, and it's too bad this is a...
The Utrecht Psalter on CD-ROM. Wow, I love that.
So I have the CD-ROM with the full Utrecht Psalter, which came out in 1996. And this is arguably the first complete digital facsimile that was actually meant for a larger public. So by the way, a facsimile is a direct copy of a medieval manuscript. But of course, there have been digitizations before that. And actually, this CD-ROM is more of a keepsake than anything else, because I, at the moment, don't have the equipment to run a CD anymore, because my laptop doesn't take it. And so it's really interesting in that way, because this kind of very old digitization project is no longer really viable. So digitization as we know it today really picked up in the early 2000s. So you can think of, for example, the British Library's Turning the Pages project. And at the moment, really, digitization projects are everywhere. If we're thinking generally, I think the purposes digitization projects serve are manifold. Generally, projects are initiated by the keeping institutions, so like libraries or collections, or by research projects. So research is really a big reason to digitize and making things accessible for more people. And there is, of course, the idea that digitization also helps with preservation of manuscripts. So if you put manuscripts online, that means that people don't really have to go and look at the physical original, which means that less hands kind of degrade the fragile material. But then on the other hand, you have the argument that with the promotion that a manuscript gets by being digitized, more and more people actually want to go and see it in the flesh. So there's this push and pull. So whether digitization is actually a good preservation method is to be doubted, I think, especially when we think about the extremely fragile nature of digital medieval manuscripts themselves. So they are really subject to rapid obsolescence and decline. If they survive for 10 years, that would be very long. And you can compare that to a manuscript that's hundreds of years old and the parchment is still there, even though this digital material degrades so quickly.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting, because when I was preparing for the questions, I was, and especially that question, I was thinking at when I started teaching like nearly 10 years ago. And at the time, I was mainly using a website by the Bibliothèque Nationale de France, which is called Mandragore, and it's really illumination. So it was to kind of make my PowerPoints beautiful and stuff. Mm-hmm. And now this website is kind of old-ish and a little bit obsolete. The pictures are not high resolution anymore, but 10 years ago, it was kind of cutting edge. And so, there is this obsolescence, that factor that is really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I always think it's really interesting when you find these kind of, I know this is kind of general word that's people use. It's called the digital incunable. So it's like kind of early digitization projects that sometimes you kind of still find floating around on the web. Some of them are still kept up in their original state, which I think is usually very interesting because that's often not done. So obsolescence often comes with kind of the idea that software and programs or servers, they become better and better, whereas the data that you have on there is so old that it doesn't really work anymore with the new software that we have. It doesn't really run anymore. So this is a huge problem, not only in manuscript digitization, but in just the digital world in general, really.
So I have the feeling that digitization is the next step after prior endeavors aiming at preservation and outreach in terms of manuscript. And I was thinking 19th century editions of manuscript. Then we had facsimiles, microfilms. So there is a long tradition here. So I was just wondering about the links you see between old paper editions, facsimiles, microfilms, and now digital manuscripts.
Yes, that's a really interesting question, and I think one of my favorite things to talk about, because there are definitely links. I mean, there is a huge tradition of kind of reproducing and copying manuscripts. I mean, manuscripts themselves are copies of other manuscripts, so we're beginning with kind of the medieval manuscript tradition itself. So the 19th century, of course, is very interesting with the kind of development and innovation of image capture technologies. So things like photography or photolith. So the Utrechtsalter is actually the very first medieval manuscript, as far as I know, that has been completely photographed. So that's also kind of why I like to call digital medieval manuscript, why I like to call them digital facsimiles. It's because it also acknowledges this tradition of facsimile making. And of course, this also falls into the realm of microfilm and even modern kind of these luscious, beautiful facsimile editions that you can buy that are almost as expensive as a manuscript themselves. I think it is very important to kind of acknowledge this tradition, because even though digitization is something very new, and or at least it was very new in the 1990s, at the moment, of course, but it is also something quite old, and it kind of reflects ways of dealing with manuscripts that were already in existence.
Yeah, since the Middle Ages, as you said, which is very nice. So let's go back to the physical distance with manuscripts induced by digitization. And this distance was clearly aggravated by COVID, but it existed before that. And I've experienced multiple times the frustration of going to an archival center, you know, very hopeful and happy because I wanted to look at a manuscript or set of sources. And instead, I was directed towards the dreaded and awful microfilm machine. I was sometimes being handed a CD-ROM and even sometimes directed to a website. Sometimes, and that was the worst, a website that was kind of on the network of the archival center, so it was only accessible in the room. Yeah. That's really like crazy. And it was too bad, because really touching a manuscript with gloves, of course, it's a wholesome experience. There is a thrill, the ease to turn the pages, the smell, the thought of the people who wrote them and read them hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And I know that you written about that. So could you talk a little bit about this relation we humans and medievalists have with physical manuscripts?
Yes, I can. Absolutely. But first I want to say Or at least this is what we do in the UK, or in most libraries I've been in the UK. I don't know what it's like in Canada, but you should never wear gloves when touching a parchment manuscript.
Well, it's in the south of France where I go, and they always give us either cotton gloves or the awful medical gloves.
Oh, the medical gloves.
I really hate it.
Mm. Yeah, so I just, I'm not sure whether you want to keep this in here, but...
it's interesting. Go ahead.
Okay, so especially not the cotton gloves that you get in the museum. So it really the gloves really diminish your sense of touch, and it makes it much more likely that you kind of accidentally break off like a little piece of parchment, anything like that. Mm. So usually libraries ask you to thoroughly wash your hands so that all the dirt and grease is gone. And you can use just your bare hands. That's fine. And this is actually much better for the manuscripts.
Well, I'll bring the podcast to the archival center and I'll have them listen to that and not have me wear gloves.
I hope so. I hope so. I've had so many run-ins of people, especially people who probably have never seen a manuscript and see me on a photograph or someone else just not wearing gloves when touching a manuscript, and they're outraged, and I have to explain all the time. But there's truly nothing like touching a parchment page, I think. So feeling the hair side and the flesh side of the parchment and kind of how sturdy it is or soft it is, it really makes a difference. And that's kind of also brings me to what you're asking about. So there is something magical about being in the presence of a medieval manuscript, which I'm sure you and I have experienced many times. And I'm hoping many of our listeners as well. So these manuscripts are kind of witnesses to hundreds of years of history, and they still survive now. So that's kind of very amazing to think about. And sometimes they're in relatively unscathed states, and sometimes they're completely battered up. I don't think this is really inherent to the manuscript itself, this kind of magical feeling. It is more something that we have been taught to think this way about cultural artifacts. So you go to the reading room and you enter this kind of magical room, kind of where you have to be quiet, and everyone around you is also kind of looking at ancient manuscripts and documents. And it may have taken you some effort to be allowed to see that manuscript even. So there's this gatekeeping as well, which makes it kind of a special experience, because you are the chosen one, whereas other people may have kind of been turned away at the gates, and then you've already been reading about this manuscript, so you've kind of had this idea build up in your head. And I think the kind of that magical experience is more built up by what we think about manuscripts more so than the manuscript themselves. And I think it's really interesting to think about kind of the relationship that people have with digital manuscripts and how that contrasts with medieval manuscripts, with kind of physical manuscripts. So this kind of magical experience does not really translate to the digital manuscripts. And that's mainly because of the value we attach to medieval manuscripts, to kind of their material form and their history and their kind of cultural value. And this does not really translate to the value we attach to a digital object. I think digital manuscripts are mostly seen kind of as tools, as a lens through which we can see the medieval manuscripts. And tools are generally not valued as cultural objects. So we sit behind our desks in our homes and we scroll through the digital collections of a library. It's very much a quotidian thing to do, kind of every day. And there's really nothing special to it. So, well... that is at least until you start to research digital manuscripts themselves and see them as objects of study in themselves. Because I can really get excited when I'm looking at specific digitization and think about how they were made and in their context and kind of their environment and how they are used, stuff like that. So for me, I can really see the beauty in digital things. They're quite special to me. So this experience has kind of been made by how I value digital objects now as well as medieval manuscripts.
Yeah, that's very interesting, this shift of perspective. Mm. All right, so let's jump into your PhD project, which is called The Digital Medieval Manuscript Approaches to Digital Codicology. Codicology means the study of manuscripts, but not the study of the textual content. It's really about the physical object, that is the manuscript, the materials, parchment of paper, the inks and binding techniques, sometimes the mise en page, the way they are organized, the paleography, which is the handwriting, the illuminations, decorations, marginalia, etc. How do digital manuscripts and distance to the physical object are changing the way in which codicologists study them?
So I am interested in how we can study the digital medieval manuscripts within codicological framework. So for me, the digital medieval manuscript itself is the primary research object, and digital codicology means that I used codicological terms to investigate what a digital medieval manuscript is. And for kind of in this context, my research looks at digitization from specifically a materialist perspective. So I'll explain a little bit what I mean by that. So this really begins by acknowledging the digital facsimile's material nature. So I like to see the digitization process as a translation. So the medieval manuscript is translated into another and completely different material object. But in my research, I usually look at the kind of the front facing of what you see in the digital manuscript. So kind of what the user experiences. So that which is kind of bright and colorful on your screen. Then secondly, I see the digital facsimile as a distinct object. So it is quite the ontological troublemaker, I must say. And I could talk for hours about the relationship between medieval manuscripts and the digital reproduction, kind of how they relate to one another. But to keep it short, I see the digital facsimile as simultaneously a copy of the medieval manuscript and as an object in itself. So it exists and functions as its own object in digital space. So digital codicology means that we can look at the digital material of the digital medieval manuscripts, and from there analyze its function in the world, how it is used, and what it really means to digitize cultural heritage objects. So I think it is important to take the digital facsimile seriously because it is an important cultural object in our lives today. And with this digital codicological method, I argue that the digital facsimile of medieval manuscripts are distinct objects with histories of their own. So they are made within projects, by people, and within specific institutional environments. So that is something that I look at in my dissertation. And then I look at how digital facsimiles exist within and affect larger cultural practices. And this is a really fun chapter in my dissertation because I look at the kind of prevalence of making memes from medieval images. Usually when we think about digital medieval manuscripts, about how they function within scholarly contexts, because generally scholars look at these digitizations. But I am really interested in how these images kind of make their way into a more broader audience, and how they are just shared online without any context. Usually these are miniatures. And I'm looking at one specific manuscript. This is one of the Der Natuurbloemen manuscripts in National Library in the Netherlands. And this is it's not a bestiary, but most of the images are similar to bestiary. So it's a lot of animals. And they're really funny and kind of weird. And I think that really speaks to people. So when they see these images, people are kind of inclined to, first of all, share them, but second of all, also kind of make these kind of memetic jokes because of them. And I think memes in general are really interesting kind of cultural objects because they play with this really complex intertextuality. And when you're looking at a medieval meme, you not only have the complex intertextuality of the meme that's coming in, of kind of the modern reference that's coming on, but you also have the medieval imagery there. So it's it's a really like interesting kind of new contextualization of medieval images. And I think this is, digitization has kind of played into this way of thinking about medieval manuscripts. So that's one of the aspects. And then, what I also look at is in kind of thinking about digital codicology is the importance of digital facsimiles when we're thinking about preservation issues. And so we've talked about this earlier, but preservation issues that are prevalent for the physical manuscript, but also looking at preservation for the digital manuscripts. So this is really what I mean by digital codicology.
I'm interested especially in what you said about the way in which the manuscripts are presented and what information is given to the people and how we interact with them. So to conclude, Suzette, I like to ask my guests the same quick question. What advice would you give to a prospective graduate student in your field?
Are we looking for very practical advice or looking more in the realm of, I don't know.
Whatever you want. It can be practical, it can be philosophical. Guests, you know, they are going in all directions. And right now I didn't have twice the same answer.
Okay, so my advice would be, I'm usually one for the practical advice, I think. So my advice would be write a lot. Generally, just write. Yeah. Try to write something every day. And because I think most of my dissertation and the arguments that I make and kind of the way that I thought through all of my material, because it's in the beginning, I think your material seems like a lot, has really taken shape because I've been writing so much. And then my second piece of advice is when you're citing something, even if you're in your first year or your second year and you're writing and you want to cite something, cite the page numbers. Because
oh my god, yes. I did the same. Oh yes. Oh no, the last. Oh yes.
Because
yes,
I am at the moment editing to hand in my dissertation, and it's horrific. Yeah. Because I have to go back. Because for some reason, in some cases, I did not cite the page numbers, and please do that.
I agree. And sometimes you're like, did the book actually say that? Because I cannot find it anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that was a very practical, very, very, very good advice. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much, Suzette. It was very interesting.
Thanks so much for having me. I had great fun.
That was Suzette van Haren from the Universities of Groningen and St. Andrews. You can find out more about Suzette in the show notes. Stay with us because the episode isn't over yet. Let's bring in Peter Konieczny from medievalist.net. Hi, Peter. How are you? What did you think of the interview?
She's talking about the people that are doing God's work, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, creating these, you know, digitization of manuscripts. And, you know, first of all, I found it was very funny how, you know, the early efforts are now, like, often it's really hard to access, right? I think I have a few CD-ROMs that
I'm
like,
sure
I
you
don't
do.
Have a CD. With the manuscripts, but I have no way of playing them on my latest computers and stuff like that. So, but it's certainly one of the aspects that's of the Middle Ages that people really, really enjoy. And like, we often kind of post about like new online databases, and they get like tons and tons of visitors, right? Just people fascinated to find out that, hey, this manuscript is now online and I can check it out. So it was very cool to see like that's the kind of field she's kind of thinking about and working in.
Absolutely. I think it also, what's fun is also that it takes us back to the beginnings of the medieval world on the internet. And I mean, you've been there for a long time on medievalist.net. And I was also thinking, you know, about, what's his name? Is it Eric Wackel? He was a professor, I think, in the Low Countries before moving to Canada. And he had a Tumblr page. And that was viral, but it was like not the beginning of the internet, but maybe, I don't know, a good 10 years, 15 years ago, I would say, early 2000s.
Yeah, around that. Yeah, he was Eric, and he's been a guest like on the website and our other podcast. I really love the guy. He was very important for him to like reach out to the public. So yeah, he kind of started like websites. Tumblr page was really cool. He's done a bunch of other stuff as well. So it's kind of fascinating. Yeah, like, you know, like, hey, how you bring out, you know, what you can tell the general public and say, hey, this is things you can learn about the Middle Ages. And like, of course, the best one was where like they found the cat's paws.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I remember. Oh, cute that was. Yeah.
Adorable. But you know, we were talking. He was talking about like memes and like how you know how much growth there's been and how many people are doing that. There is a special project from the Dutch National Library. It's called KB now. So, but they have the medieval meme generator. So I think if you go to medievalmemes.org, you can like create your own with this. Like, oh, they have a you know like a dozen or so images that you can base it out and make your own little memes. So, but yeah. Like run Instagram and I see him all the time now.
Yeah, so if you listeners want to do a medieval meme, do tag medievalist.net on your publications, either on Facebook or Instagram or maybe on Twitter.
Indeed. And also just check out medievalist.net. Like, you know, we have a lot of kind of news articles about openings of these new databases and stuff like that over the years. And just kind of fascinating to look at like that history of the online world.
Yeah. I will say though, and that's my Frenchness coming across being, okay, you know, criticizing stuff. I think sometimes what I find a bit annoying on all these great databases, and I mean, the British Library is amazing and many other sites are great. It's always a human work, right? And it's indexing what is on the picture. Sometimes, you know, there is no proper description. So if you're looking for stuff, sometimes you won't find them, but you know there are pictures. So you need to find a way to find the picture to then find it on the website, although it has not been properly indexed. And that was my French complaint.
Oh, yeah. I hear you there. I hear you there, sister. That keeps me up at night looking for this particular image, right? and it's so hard to find because the indexing and like how to describe, like even the British Library has this, like they have a great site, but you know sometimes they give you tons of details about a particular image and sometimes they give you nothing.
Yeah.
Right. So, Yeah, I think like, you know, like partly it's, you know, we're still in the early days of doing like digitization and all that kind of that, you know, it's going to be a problem that like, you know, we will look back in 20 years. It's like, oh, it's so they have it so easy now. Like,
yeah, maybe a virtual walk inside the British Library, picking up manuscripts with our VR stuff.
That's right. You won't get to like your archive in like southern France. So they say, "Oh, go to the computer or go to the you're 20 feet from the manuscript itself. Like, you're gonna go look at it on a microfiche." So
yes, it's so frustrating. I think that my archive center. It's honestly, I won't say it's the worst because they might be listening. I won't say anything.
All right.
Thanks again. That was fun. Thanks, Peter.
Take care.
You were listening to the Medieval Grad Podcast, brought to you by medievalist.net. If you want to support us and this podcast, you can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/medievalists. You can get a lot of great benefits on Patreon, including being able to hear these episodes early. We love doing this show and we really appreciate your help. I'm Lucie Lemonnier. You can find me on Instagram at The French Medievalist, and you can look me up on academia.edu. Thank you for tuning in. Au revoir.